Welcome to the Pinnacle 5 podcast series. I'm Summer Yeiser, host of this series of information and advice on financial topics. Our topic for this podcast is a subject of great concern to us all, how to avoid being a victim of fraud. Our guest, Kim Jenny, the Risk and Performance Manager at Pinnacle, brings 34 years of experience in helping individuals and companies mitigate risk. Kim, thanks for sharing your expertise on this important topic. Tell us what's critical.
Well, Summer, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. You'd think after so many years in this business that I would have seen all of these types of frauds, but they continue to develop new ones. I think one overarching theme is that if our clients and associates can understand how these events happen, they can then do something to try and mitigate and protect their own finances. They say people steal because they can, and so my belief is if we can understand and practice being a hard target, we can really mitigate those activities of being victimized. I do plan to talk about five key tips today. One, protect your personal information. Two, remember the old saying, if it's too good to be true. Three, accept responsibility for knowing when financial information is delivered to you, bank statements, insurance statements, things of that nature. Four, recognize that as great as the internet is, it's one of the fastest growing areas of fraud. And then lastly, please don't ever use your bank account to help somebody conduct financial transactions if you don't know those individuals.
Well, Kim, that's a pretty broad range of information there. So before we jump into those five specific tips, what would you say are just some of the common schemes that frequently occur today?
I'd say probably the top two or three that I can think of is a Ponzi scheme. Somebody promising greater returns than what might be normal. Secondly, are some of these Nigerian and sweepstake schemes. I'll send you a check, you've won something, send me something back. And then thirdly is really people trying to gain information from you through either pretext calling or email phishing attempts, things of that nature. They want to learn something about you and they have no right to know that information. They're trying to steal personal information.
Now, Kim, what is pretext calling?
It's somebody pretending either to be a business that you operate with and they want to get personal information from you, your account number, date of birth, social. The people that you do business with, they have that information. There's also situations where somebody may be acting like they are calling on your behalf. So they may call your bank and they may say that they're a car dealer that you're trying to do business with. But the whole purpose is that they're trying to glean information that they should not have about your personal identity. Now, if we go back and think about these top five points, you know, my first tip is protect your personal information. I would first, Summer, suggest that no one carry their social security number, or they should avoid recording personal numbers like a social security, a tax ID number, their personal identification code in their wallet or in their purse. They ought to store that stuff in a safe place, either at home or in a bank safety deposit box, something along those lines. And for the clients and our associates that may still receive a paper statement, many firms today are offering e-statements. And because theft of information that is left in a mailbox is so easy and it's prevalent, my suggestion would be for folks to consider receiving an e-statement where they can control when they pull the information and if in fact they even print the information. For those who choose not to do that, they can purchase a very inexpensive document shredder and they can get that from Office Max or Office Depot, Walmart, things of that nature, and I would encourage them to avoid discarding any kind of personal information in their home trash receptacle. If they're mailing bills, I would encourage them not to put it in their mailbox with the flag up, but instead drop it in a U.S. postal mailbox. It's much safer, and they eliminate the chance of somebody taking items, which would include a check that's got their account number information, etc. I would also, and we'll talk more about emails, we mentioned this in pretext, I would avoid opening up any type of email that was unsolicited or if I don't know that person. That's how people attempt, and we'll spend more time talking about that, to actually try to compromise your personal computers at home and learn things about you. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. The second tip is, you know, this notion about if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Someone that comes to your door and says, I'll re-roof your house for $1,000, but I need the money up front. Yeah, nobody's going to get their house re-roofed for $1,000. But somebody wants you to give them money and they want to go away. You know, it's like investing in a scheme. Here in Middle Tennessee over the last couple of years, we've seen several well-publicized cases of people who were investors. They took monies. They then had personal gain associated with that because they didn't do what they were professing to do, and that was invest their money and send them their returns, et cetera, et cetera. So if the return is too good, it's the old adage, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. I'd be skeptical and I would avoid it.
So, Kim, we're talking about like a Bernie Madoff type of situation.
Exactly. He's kind of like the poster child of all this stuff. There are going to be times where someone literally will have a pet rock idea. You know, to this day, I wish that I had invested in Google or, you know, eBay or something like that and then gotten out, you know, 12, 18 months later, but I didn't. So there are some events like that. But generally speaking, if you don't know something about what they're asking you to invest in, then your research and due diligence, that's time well spent to try and avoid or at least make yourself a harder target for being a victim. Number three is I try to get our associates and also our clients to accept responsibility for their personal information. And by that I mean know when your bank is going to send you your bank statement or your credit card company is going to send you your statement. If you normally receive your statement the third week of the month or by the 15th and that doesn't appear, then after a day or so, contact them. Everybody has customer service phone centers. They may have, if they had a problem, they may post that on their website. But know when to expect personal information that's being sent to you. I said earlier, if you can manage e-statements rather than personal statements, that's a personal bias of mine. I think that's a good practice. When you get your statement, open it, review it in a timely manner. Regulations do call for how much time somebody has to review something and report something that is an error. But in truth, I've seen a number of times in my career checks that will be stolen. Somebody will alter the check. They'll then pay that to somebody else, but it's still a good check. The only thing that has changed is who it was payable to. So the check goes back to the bank. It's not like it's uncommon. It posts. Well, the person who owns that account, they don't know that check has been wrongfully processed by somebody. So they get their bank statement. They have then X number of days beyond receiving their statement to report a discrepancy. So someone could have long ago deposited that item, thought that the funds were good, and have spent those funds, and now that item comes back to them and they're responsible for that. So this notion about getting your statements, knowing when they are received, actually reviewing them, and then reporting anything that would cause you concern if there was an abnormal transaction, unusual, back to the provider of that statement in a timely manner is a great, great mitigant to being a hard target. And then lastly, I would encourage folks to pull their credit bureau. There's three primary credit bureau agencies, and the credit bureaus will provide you a free credit report annually. So my suggestion is stagger them. Pull one from company A, pull another one 6 months later from Company B, continue to do that. You're not paying for the credit report, but you will at least be able to see if there's something in there, a trade has been reported that would suggest you've got a particular issue, or if someone has tried and gotten credit within your name on your Social Security, and then they're not paying that particular information. So it's a great way to be more responsible for your personal information. Summer, for point number four, it's really safeguards about cyber crimes. And I don't mean this to be said in a rude way, but the truth is that when people buy a PC and they're going to conduct business or they're going to use that PC, it's not like any other home appliance. This is a machine that needs to be maintained. It needs to have security features up to date. It's not just like a toaster or a toaster oven that you can just plug in and use when you want. And so some of the things that I'd like to suggest to the audience is that, A, the machine needs to have its antivirus applications up to date. They need to be working. They need to help prevent things from happening on that particular machine unbeknownst to the user. The second, I guess, most important item would be if they receive emails from people that they don't know, delete them. Don't use them. If they should open an email and then discover that it doesn't look right or it doesn't feel right, then delete it. Many times the fraudsters will have somebody baited, they'll open up an email, they'll download attachments, they'll provide personal information. And so I guess in my view, if I could get users to think about it's an important machine, if they conduct financial transactions on it, they need to protect themselves. And so their antivirus and firewall, their applications need to be up to speed to help prevent things from happening. And then secondly, when they do get into emails, they need to watch for these phishing attacks where somebody's trying to gain your trust and collect information from you or download something on your machine.
And Kim, how do I know if I'm looking at an email and I think that it's legitimate, how can I know for sure that I'm really looking at an email from the people that I think it's originated from?
A great way to do that without clicking on the link, generally the email has this URL link embedded in it. Without actually clicking on it, if you'll move your mouse over the link slowly, and as you hover on that link, you'll actually see an image of where you'll be redirected. And so if I was, for example, receiving information from, let's say, the Red Cross, they were asking me for information. When I slowly move the mouse over that link, I ought to see something that resembles a path that's going to get me back to the Red Cross. If I don't see something, or if there's not a connection that makes sense, then I would avoid it. I would certainly not click on it, and I would delete the email.
Oh, well, that's very helpful to know.
The last thing, Summer, I'd like to close with is this notion about people using their accounts to help others conduct financial transactions. And I would really say you want to safeguard your personal accounts and just don't permit somebody, don't fall victim to either a way to earn some money, a way to receive money by using your bank account. Some of these crooks have actually advertised on websites. Some of these monsterjobs.com, things of that nature. And the ad will say, earn 10, 20% using your own bank account. And what they're looking for are victims that they can send a bogus transaction to with the instructions to deposit it. Then once the check clears, to return a portion of that money back to them, but yet they get to keep the 10, the 15, the 20% for their time and for their energy for supporting that particular transaction. No one that is legitimate does that. That is one of the most common frauds, is that I want to buy something that you have, or I want you to participate in this opportunity, and you'll earn 10%. It goes back to that, if it's too good to be true, it is. Just don't do it. Avoid it like the plague. And so, secondly, if someone has they've opened up their statement, they detect that a fraudulent transaction has appeared. If someone has an account number and a routing number, and they're attempting to create transactions on your account, the only thing you can do is close your account. It's naive to think that I could leave the account open because the bogus transactions have stopped. I've seen transactions stop and somebody thought they were safe, they refused to close the account, and 2 years later they started back up. So if somebody's account is compromised, the best advice there is to close it, get it reestablished under a new ID, a new account. Lastly, this is unfortunate, but in another time, we learned of a situation where a client was doing business with somebody that they didn't know. They deposited a large check, several hundred thousand, under the pretense that they were going to do business with them. The bank put a hold on that because they were uncertain. The hold dropped off after a couple of weeks. They submitted the money back. They took their portion that was theirs, and then a month later that item came back because it was an altered item, and they had every right to return that. At that point in time, that money was long gone, and so unfortunately that customer, who didn't know who they were doing business with, had permitted and used their account to conduct this large transaction. They returned a portion. They thought it was safe. They thought they had earned a quick 10%, only to find out that a month and a half later this item came back, and it was a material item. It was devastating to them. And so, again, I just love the opportunity to chat with you. I've been involved with these types of risk and cons for quite a few years, and it always surprises me that as smart as I think we are, they're always smarter, and so they can always think faster, and they can always find victims to do that. So I guess the points I would like to leave with is that, A, be aware of your environment. Make yourself a hard target. The best thing you can do is have those types of philosophies and controls, because the crooks will go to the path of least resistance. And so ideally, if you'll make yourself that hard target, you'll mitigate risk and they'll go find somebody else to try and compromise.
Well, Kim, thank you for being with us today and sharing these 5 tips on how we can avoid being a victim of fraud. You've definitely demonstrated how critical it is to protect ourselves. And thanks to everyone for listening to this Pinnacle 5 podcast. I invite you to check out the Learning Center on the Pinnacle website, where you'll find a section on fraud protection with numerous informative articles on this subject.